Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Helen.
And I'm Stephen.
And welcome to this week's New Statesman podcast.
In a special episode,
we look ahead to the local and European elections with Anoush Shakalian.
I talk about my trip to Wales.
Anoush talks about her trip to Hartlepool. And we answer, what can we do now that there's no Parliament for a week? Hello and welcome to a special recess week version of the New Statesman podcast. We're recording this on Monday and we have lured into the podcast bunker Anoush Shakalian.
Hello.
Hello. I want to start with you though, Stephen, because your column in the magazine this week is about Wales, land of my fathers. And you went to meet, I'm going to get his name wrong, aren't I, Adam Price,
yep.
Who is the new leader of Plaid Cymru, installed in September. He's 50. You start off by saying that he's a little bit like Tony Blair, which is obviously very exciting for me. Explain that to me.
Well, so the weird irony is this is someone who, when he was cutting his teeth as an MP in Westminster, was a real kind of thorn in the side of the then new Labour government. He fairly successfully prosecuted the argument that they were too close to Lakshmi Mittal, something which they, of course, denied. But, you know, it was a story which went on for some time. He tried and failed to impeach Tony Blair over the Iraq War. But the reason why, weirdly, meeting him, I was overwhelmingly reminded of Blair is one, the kind of, you know, the physical, you know, like the blue eyes.
Did he give you the high Stephen?
The open shirt, yeah. The being open, the kind of the same style. You know, when we went around very, you know, so we met first at Coffee Co. in Cardiff Bay, which is a really lovely mini chain where I had a delicious vegan pie. But when we were going round on the rest of the visit, that thing that when people meet Blair, it's like they do that kind of sunflower thing where they kind of incline towards it. You kind of see him
his tan.
Doing the same kind of, you know, kind yeah. of that sort of conveying of warmth.
So he's got charisma and he says a lot of things about modernisation.
And changing the party so it can win and breaking it out of its... Because obviously Plaid Cymru have had... both the advantage, then I think they're basically the only party in this country not called Labour or the Conservatives who you could say have a genuine core, but areas in which Welsh is spoken as a first language a lot, but they also have had a problem, particularly at Westminster elections, of breaking out of that. And he is trying to embark on this project that, as with Blair, of getting his party to win in places it had, in the case of Plaid Cymru, never won before.
So let me get this right. So Welsh Assembly is elected by Dahont, the best, as we know.
No, so it's elected by the additional member system.
Additional member system, yeah. Not Dahont. That's the European elections. Yeah. But there are 60 AMs. The next election is in 2021.
Yeah.
Currently, there are 10 Plaid AMs, 12 Conservatives, and plus, including Mark Reckless, who sits as an independent Conservative, which is, he was way ahead of Nick Bowles on that one. And let me see, 29 Labour? Is that right? They're just under half, right?
Yeah.
So what you say in the column is that there is a chance next time that if Plaid make a sufficiently big gain, they could be part of a coalition that for the first time doesn't involve Labour. And Labour's lock on Wales is like my lock on all the mini eggs in my local Tesco. It is utterly impossible to get it off.
Yeah, I mean, so... Yeah.
So it would be a big deal if they made a big gain and Labour wasn't, you know, in a government in the Welsh Assembly, right?
It would. So, I mean, so according to the polls now, which are widely believed by... Well, obviously, Plaid Cymru loves to tell you and they think those polls are real for obvious reasons.
Because they're doing well in them, yeah.
And everyone else will kind of go, well, you know, polls are polls. And then they'll kind of look at you and go like, yeah, but they feel about right to me. And they show Labour still ahead, still the largest party, but short of... So essentially, no one has won a majority yet because the system is designed to frustrate that. Obviously, as the SNP in 2011 showed,
yep.
you can, if you're very lucky with where your vote spread is, break that, but it's very difficult to pull off. But crucially, at every election, although they, so at the moment they have a coalition with Kirsty Williams, the sole Liberal Democrat member of the Welsh Assembly, they have always had to, they've always been in a situation where, yes, they've needed a coalition partner, but there is no way to form a government without them. At present, if the polls are to be believed, they would, if there were an election held tomorrow, be, they would not be an essential part of a coalition. Mm-hmm. Another government could be formed.
So you could, do you think they would go into a coalition with the Conservatives?
Oh, so actually this is the, so there's the thing he's said to me, which I think is the first time he's explicitly said this, is he is not looking to go into coalition with either. He is seeking a minority government. He doesn't believe that either of the unionist parties...
It's not in the piece, Stephen. Just going to put that out there.
Plus, I'm going to do a piece online about it,
right,
as well.
Okay, well, right. Actually, in many ways, this is a podcast exclusive.
A podcast exclusive. he said... he'd said,
yeah, he wants to go minority administration.
A minority administration, because, yeah, the two unionist parties, you know, he said, is, are in different ways responsible for the present state of Wales.
I liked his line about his, Wales is stuck in an oasis of stasis.
Yeah, well, I mean...
like a blur of her. I just, it was just a great line.
But, I mean, this is, like, the really fascinating thing, right? Then you have... in Wales, in a time in which the whole of Europe has seen political earthquakes, transformations, changes, you have this kind of quite centralising social democratic government still just plugging away, just there, which has not had that same kind of tumult. Now, that's partly, of course, because of their historic dominance and the fact that what they have mostly been quite effective at doing is... stealing the clothes of their
This is Welsh
opponents.
Labour, right?
Yeah.
So in 2017, was it the same as in 2015 that a different party won in each of the four nations? Yeah. So Northern Ireland, DUP got most MPs, Scotland, SNP got most MPs, Wales was Labour, England was Conservative.
Yeah.
Okay, that's exciting. And then they've had, that's been the case, I think you put it, since the dawn of universal suffrage.
Yeah, I mean, this thing is, a lot of people kind of compare Wales and Scotland as heartlands, or Wales and London and as Labour heartlands, right? They really just are not remotely comparable, right? You're like, they have never lost a European election. They have been the largest party in local government, basically.
Well, there was a time, wasn't there, when Winston Churchill was MP for Dundee? I mean, which kind of,
yeah, I mean, this
can't really imagine this happening in Merthyr Tydfil.
But also, yeah, there are people in living memory who were alive, who can remember the Scottish Conservatives being the largest party in terms of votes and seats, right? That is just nothing comparable. And the other kind of fascinating and fun thing about Welsh politics is that there isn't even really that long an interim period when the Liberal Party is dying and the Welsh Labour Party is growing. They almost essentially overnight go from being very dominant Liberal Party, very dominant Labour Party. So it is a huge challenge than they have taken on. You know, is not his priority is not kind of, you know, well, let's just be a kind of, like, you know, left coalition partner or challenger to the Welsh Labour Party, let's try and replace it. One of the other questions I asked him was, so in 1999 the SNP and Plaid Cymru did, Plaid Cymru actually did a bit better than the SNP in terms of vote share. This is not going to come as a shock to any of our listeners. The SNP are now doing rather better than Plaid Cymru, up until the point he has got a former SNP MP to do a report on where, and I was just
so,
like,
Angus Robinson is doing a kind of the same thing, I guess. Is he doing the same thing that kind of Bob Kerslake is doing for Labour, and that he's just looking at the structure and governance and, like, how do you run a modern
political
party?
Yeah, and how do you make the case for independence, and how do you succeed as this type of party? And I basically went, well, why is it that, you know, starting from 99 as this point, they're a hegemonic government, and you're asking for advice for a guy who lost his seat in the 2017 election? I obviously phrased
wow,
it in a more charming way than
brutal
that.
Brutal interview technique you've got there.
No, I mean, my interview technique, particularly because he is very charismatic, so I actually had that horrible soul-destroying thing. You know when you listen back to it and you can hear yourself going, and you're like, oh, God, you're
such a fickle. Yeah, I have to say that putting you with a Welsh Tony Blair, I mean, that's a lovely accent. Education. It's just, I can be, bowled over. Anoush, you've also been on the road.
Yes. Yeah, no, I actually, what Stephen was saying really chimed with some stuff that I've been picking up on the road. We've been doing local elections reporting ahead of the councils that are up for election in May, at the beginning of May. And I was in Maidenhead on Friday, which is Theresa May's constituency, very safe Conservative constituency and Conservative council as well. There's no Labour councillor on that
voted
council.
Voted Remain?
Yeah, Remain by not a huge margin, but yeah. So I was I was reporting there, and what was really interesting is that I could not find, aside from the Conservative councillor that I interviewed, anyone who was going to, who said confidently that they wanted to vote Conservative, which was obviously, it's not a scientific exploration, just vox popping anyone who will speak to you. But I thought that was quite interesting. I predict from my reporting there that the vote will probably drop for the Conservatives there, not that there's any sort of true opposition that could rise up to truly challenge them there. But the reason for that was because everyone I spoke to was saying, I'm just minded to vote for... Someone said to me, I'm just going to make a really random choice. That's what I want to do. I'm just going to do something completely unpredictable with my vote. And I was like, okay, you know... That makes sense with what people are saying about the upcoming European elections, the fact that it could be like a big boost for the smaller parties, particularly the Brexit party, but I'm sure that's probably a bit overblown. But people are thinking about voting for unexpected outcomes in whatever elections are coming up, basically. And a lot of people were mixing the two up, too.
Okay,
so I got a lot of responses from people saying, I'm going to vote for that Nigel Farage's new party. And I, you know... I was like, okay, but what about the, you know, you can't vote for them here in the local elections.
Oh, right, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, okay.
So people were mixing it up, but I think in a way that tells you quite a lot.
Well, so Stephen, I've got a question about the Brexit Party. So the last polling that I saw suggested that UKIP, now led by Gerald Batten, who was wearing the most golf club tie I've ever seen when I was sitting next to him on the Andrew Marr programme, has got Sargon of Akkad. He's basically got a load of like internet edgelords to kind of sit for his party. So that's UKIP now. It's now too right-wing for Nigel Farage versus Nigel Farage's Brexit party. If Nigel Farage's Brexit party does quite well, and the polling I saw still splitting UKIP's old 14%, like 7-7, does that prove that Nigel Farage has got a personal vote? Dun, dun, dun!
Well, I mean, so he's a leader, so a leader does have a... So, I mean, all politicians have a degree of personal vote.
Whoa, this is not what you said when we were talking about Douglas Carswell.
No, but so Douglas Carswell, there will be some people in Clacton who will vote for Douglas Carswell. They just won't be a significant number of people. And the thing is, when you look at Douglas Carswell's electoral
performance...
Are
you talking about Douglas Carswell?
compared to... Well, I mean, Douglas Carswell doesn't live in Clacton. So why would he want to do a thing like that? But you know, if you look at, say, the electoral performance of the average Conservative MP who won their seat in 2005 to 2010, he's basically right in the middle of the pack. Because ultimately, the thing about being a personal vote is that is called doing your job as an MP, right? There will be some people who go, so-and-so helped me with this, so-and-so campaign.
Right, because what Jess Phillips said to me, which I thought was reasonable, and we were in her Birmingham constituency, she was like, I've got a really high contact rate. Like, yeah. This constituency office works incredibly hard. We speak to, 70%+ of the constituents, you know,
yeah.
Like that is a personal vote to some extent, in the sense that people know that you exist.
Yeah, I mean, but also, so to take two MPs who I think absolutely do have personal votes for actually quite similar reasons: Siobhan McDonough, the Labour MP for Mitcham and Morden, and Alex Shelbrook, the Conservative MP for Elmet and Rothwell. Now, the thing that their local opponents will talk about in awe is that they're both really, they've got their offices to be really effective at. Thank you for your letter. You know, thank you for this petition. Here's a letter on headed paper from me, signed by the MP, where I've responded in quite a detailed way. And so there will be people who will say, well, I'm not happy about this National Party, but I will vote for so-and-so because they've worked really hard. Now, the thing is if that is 3,000 people, that is a hugely impressive number of people in a constituency of 70,000 to get to forego their decision over who they would like to be Prime Minister. But it is hard to see, unless an election is very tight for other reasons, a lot of the time your personal vote just doesn't matter at all. I mean, in terms of... So the Brexit Party stuff is really interesting, right?
Because I guess because it's PR, it's very different as well, right? Because he's presuming... You think Nigel Farage is going to put himself top of his own list, right?
Yeah.
That would be...
You also do essentially have kind of like the party of, you know, like, respectable, don't worry, we hide the racists out back, versus the...
You've got to see the people we got in this party now. Woo! Some of them, I mean, I think.
Yeah, whereas, you've kind of got like sort of, yeah, the kind of the mask is not so much off, but has been ostentatiously ripped up, torn up and gone, how do you feel about that, Libs? but the fascinating thing I think about these two Brexit parties, right, is that, you know, the big thing that I think is unlikely to happen is... Most people who vote for UKIP do not know any of that stuff, right? It's a bit like, I mean, so to take a personal example, in my last set of local council elections, despite the fact that I think our mayor is very good at this, and I think the environment lead, John Burke, is also very good on environmental issues, I voted Green. I have no idea who those councillors were, those council candidates were. I just wanted to send a message about the importance of the environment to me. Now, if it is entirely possible, well, I think it's actually not true, but it is, of course, theoretically possible.
You don't care about the environment.
No,
screw those
things. I was about to say, like, it's possible that, like, the Hackney Green Council candidate in my ward, had been going around kicking dogs, but I thought, actually, that's probably a slanderous.
Literally the opposite of their platform.
I shouldn't say that.
Love dogs.
But my point is and I'm voting solely for the party's brand. Yeah. And so the big question, I think, actually, is not so much, does Nigel Farage have a personal following? But can Nigel Farage and his media allies successfully prosecute? So let's say the Green Party were taken over by,
the dog kickers.
And Caroline Lucas had her own, tree party. How effective would Caroline Lucas be at getting the message over in the next six weeks or however many it is? Actually, the Green Party is no longer a kind of cuddly way that you say, I'm unhappy that my biosphere is on fire. Actually, now I'm the way you do that.
Yeah.
Of course, it's easier for Nigel Farage because he has a more sympathetic media ecosystem, but it's still a heck of a task to inform people in that short amount of time that UKIP has changed.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I also think it reflects oddly on that decision of the artist formerly known as the Independent Group to call themselves Change UK, which is just a sort of nothing type, rather than calling themselves the Stop Brexit Party or whatever it happens to be, or the Smooth Metropolitan... party,
and maybe I'm being unduly cynical, but I think the thing is ultimately, like, the purpose of change. I mean, one, of course, the problem all new political parties have is all of the good names are taken, even if they're not being used, they are registered in the name of some bloke in a shed with the electoral.
The
commission.
Purpose of change is only like the ultimate New Statesman leader headline.
Yeah.
The purpose of change.
The new change. The purpose of change.
I can almost write that leader now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Is it to stop Brexit, or is it to use the way that Brexit has changed voting, and eventually to kind of sit there, kind of punching that Remain, hitting
or
that
button.
Or is it
to upset Jeremy Corbyn personally?
To reorient politics, right? And I think it's the latter, right? It is the,
It makes a lot of sense. If you want to still have a party if we ever leave the European Union, then you can't put... Whereas, presumably at that point, the Brexit Party mutates again into something much more...
Yeah, you could say the Brexit Party is also to capitalise on what they view as a new politics arising from the Brexit era as well.
But I guess their point is that they will always argue that Brexit has been betrayed, whatever form of... Unless it's a no deal, right? Then there is always the argument available that whatever Brexit we've got...
Yeah, but even then, when no deal causes chaos, it will be the fault of...
Incompetently implemented. Yeah, but it'll become the real Brexit Party at that point, right? Okay, that was good. So you've been up north as well.
Yeah, I've been to Hartlepool as well, where they're electing a third of their council, and that was interesting for different reasons, because there's a lot of, where these places where you have sort of a one-party state for ages, like in Wales, Stephen was talking about it, people will bring up the council of their own accord, which, in a constituency like where I grew up, in Ealing, people didn't really know their councillors, it wasn't like a huge deal. But in places where they've got these sort of councils that have been in power for so long have never changed party, people are really unsatisfied with the way that their town's being run, and they actually blame local government for that, rather than just being like, I hate this government, or I hate the Tories, even though it's a Labour constituency. And so actually the big dissent there was from the local Labour Party. They want to oust the current Labour leadership and replace it with their own. And it's not a momentum thing, as you might imagine, in the style of Haringey. It's actually just sort of like the local Fabians decided that they have a better economic model for their town. So it's sort of a geeky coup. Or at least an attempted geeky coup. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there, because it could be the next sort of, the Preston model, where they've used new procurement practices.
Some sourcing is happening. Right. So this is the idea that one of the reasons that for that Eurosceptic fringe that happens in the kind of around John McDonnell is this idea that actually without European rules you can do much more with you can direct procurement much
but
more.
But the funny thing is that the people who are actually involved in all of this stuff just do not buy that it's Corbynomics, because it's been going for so long. 15 years they've been doing it. And I've spoken to people on Manchester Council, which also does this kind of Preston model stuff, and they were like, Preston model? We've been doing it for over a decade. Even people in the Hartlepool local Labour Party who were sympathetic towards Jeremy Corbyn were like, it's not really got anything to do with him. John McDonnell has sort of is riding on the coattails of it and branding it, branding it in a way that means that people think that it's a cool sort of new Corbynite thing. Why not, you know, attach yourself to policies that you agree with? That's fine.
Imagine, remember, that was remember policies, Stephen? Remember policies?
Policies. I mean, bring back policies.
Yeah.
There's so much interesting stuff going on that's just not being reported on anymore.
Yeah, I mean, although I am enjoying this new world where we kind of have, now that the Conservative leadership race is properly happening.
Yeah, they're now announcing all of
this. Yeah, where you have government ministers saying maybe we should consider doing X. And it's just like...
You could do that in your role as a government minister. Can we have a quick trot, just because it'll amuse me, through the Conservative leadership candidates?
I mean, I'm not sure we've got that kind of time. There are basically 320 candidates.
I just want to
candidates.
Laugh at Sajid Javid, really, and his bizarre attempts to... You know what people loved about Theresa May? Her incredible authoritarianism? What if I did a sort of weird tribute act to that while also implying that I'm well gangster? That's very odd, isn't it?
So what I thought was interesting is, I mean, I basically agree that we should have a public health approach to knife crime.
I'm thinking more of the Shamima Begum stuff.
I think the slight weirdness of attaching that to this kind of like, I'm big and tough and I'm going to take away the citizenship of whoever I damn well please. I mean, so what I find distasteful about it is depriving someone's citizenship in a way that he obviously should not be doing. But what I find bizarre about it is I don't think it even makes sense from a political positioning perspective, because he's ultimately going to fail to do so. So it literally is just someone standing up and shouting.
Right, Theresa May did manage to deport Abu Hamza. That was a crucial part of the Theresa May brand. It was not that she had a right good go at it, it was that actually that was a thing that she could mark off as an achievement.
Yes, at the end, Abu Hamza had been deported, right? Whereas, ultimately, standing up and going, she has legal aid, I'm totally impotent, by the way. I am semi-liable for the fact that a child, through no fault of its own, died in a refugee camp.
Yeah, don't think that's the kind of hard man thing that you really want to do.
Do you remember the jihadi beetles or whatever they were called? Didn't he send them to America without the assurances that they wouldn't be given the death penalty?
There was talk about that, about whether or not they would weigh that. Because one of the extradition things is we shouldn't extradite people for crimes in which the death penalty is
so
an option.
So he's clearly not shy about sort of tearing up the rules of British foreign policy to sort of appeal to tabloid.
But anyway, that was all. Really wanted to stray into a bit of... Also, the Saj. I mean, this is what I'm loving about them, is there's kind of a sort of weird self-nicknaming thing. I like Steve Baker's hard man of Brexit thing, which is brilliant.
I'm not sure if the Saj thing wasn't dirty tricks on the part of his opponents. But, I mean, I think he is pretty stuffed, right? Because there's only space for one kind of sort of candidate of the establishment, as it were. And Jeremy Hunt, I think, has that pretty... locked up, and I think it's hard to see how he'll be dislodged, because if you're at the Foreign Office, no one cares about you. You're not doing Brexit.
Also, you look serious and grown up, and people, it's a time in which Theresa May's whole pitch was, I'm serious, I'm a grown up. Come on, we can't be dicking about now. You need somebody who actually knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And even among people who might have naturally gravitated towards Andrea Leadsom, that catastrophic interview, not so much what she said, but the fact that she said it just made a lot of people go, ooh, she's not baked yet.
Yeah, although I think she... actually probably could have a fairly successful second coming.
As leader of the House, I'm quite enjoying, like, I just think there's a kind of great buddy movie / odd rom-com between her and John Bercow, and the way that they sort of just clearly hate each other, you know what I mean? It's got a kind of Taming of the Shrew kind of vibe about it.
Which one is the Shrew?
No, both of them are the Shrew in different ways. But this idea that, they're kind of, friction between you guys, what's that all about? But, yeah, she's had done a proper job and kind of got on with it, which in the intervening time.
And also, in many ways, the Conservative leadership election is a bit like black hole. Well, a bit like black holes before we successfully took a photo of them, right? In the, we have a theory based on the bits of space-time we can observe that black holes exist. And we have a theory about the Tory party, which is essentially there is a candidate of the establishment who is guaranteed to get to the final runoff. There is a candidate of pure Brexit called Dominic Raab / Boris Johnson, who ought to get to the final runoff round. But then there is also a force within the Conservative Party called my right arm will fall out, I will walk over broken glass to stop Boris Johnson being Prime Minister. And we assume that, rather like mass creates black holes, right? We assume that this stop Boris force will create another candidate somewhere. But until we observe this, and then this candidate will ultimately win, but until we observe this phenomena in the real universe, they are, rather like black holes till last week, merely a theory. about space.
It's a bit like everyone not wanting no deal, but no one actually having a majority for an alternative to no deal.
That was a much less convoluted than the one I went used. But yes, it is.
I have to say, the best thing about that whole black hole story is that you look at a picture of it and you go, yeah. But, you know, I'm sure it's real. I'm not doubting it. Apparently, you know, all the lines of code are brilliant and everything. But you just go, it could just be, I mean, it was a blob.
I mean, have you ever taken a photo of an object whose heavy is mass is so strong light can't escape it?
Well, I might have done without knowing. Deep. No, I mean, yes, it's a very impressive piece. And also, classically, came from lots and lots of different scientists. A bit like the Conservative Leadership Party, right? Is that actually it was all attributed to one person, but it was the work of many hands. Yeah, that was a very long but hopefully educational look at the European and council elections. Thanks for joining us, Anoush, in the
thanks for having me
podcast catacomb. We're going to put Stephen back into his fur-lined box now for recess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And now for a section we like to call
You Ask Us
for recommendations of things to do at recess. Brackets. Anoush, name one thing that people should use the lack of Brexit-related news that creates headspace for them. Like, what should you channel that all into?
Okay, a thing that I've become obsessed with, and this sounds like I'm advertising it, which I've got nothing to do with it.
Is it a mattress? Is it a razor?
It's called Our Parks. And it's free gym classes in parks, and it's so good, and it's council run, and you can just go and you don't need to commit, you just go when you're free, and it's like yoga and boot camp and all sorts of different things depending on what you're
just
interested
in. Just in London
or in... I think it's just in London.
No, that's good. People are going to write in very cross about
that.
Yeah,
but I'm sure that the person who runs it does do other stuff. Yeah, anyway, whatever. Yeah. That's what I've been doing, and I think it's great, and they're going to pull the funding otherwise, so I think everyone should start doing it.
It's called Our...
Our Parks. You can get it on an app, and like the people who do it are proper gym instructors who work in actual classes where you have to pay.
When I go and do my boxing on a Saturday morning, there is a whole group of people doing Nordic walking in our local park, which is completely flat.
They do free boxing, boxercise. Box fit, it's called.
Box fresh.
Box fresh.
That's what I
so
do.
So just stop paying and do it for free.
Yeah, okay. Stephen, what would you like to recommend?
Actually, this is also a London thing, but... Well, so the two things I'm doing are, one, I'm sadly not doing that this month because our Dungeon Master is away. But D&D is actually really good fun. Everyone should do it. Like, it's a great team building exercise.
I just can't hear the word Dungeon Master without laughing.
I honestly think that we ought to do it one time. We ought to do it and record it on the podcast and we'd learn a lot. No, that would be terrible and self-indulgent.
I mean, don't you think it would last about 4 or 5 hours?
But it flies by.
India's like, no.
The silent India crying in the corner.
The other thing I am very much doing and enjoying is being able to cook food myself rather than having to eat in Parliament for lunch and dinner.
You like vegan now? I heard a reference to a vegan pie, which I let go, but...
I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm not like a vegan, right? I don't care about individual animal welfare. And you can write in to Stephen Dot.
I actively loathe cows.
Yeah, no, he's like, you know, I'm not for excessive cruelty.
Right.
But I solely care about it from an environmental perspective. And from an environmental perspective, you can have a little bit of beef and the odd bit of chicken. And you know, and so I'm a vegan for
you only
home
eat posh
purposes.
Meat.
Yeah, and then I only really classy meat or... When I'm in Parliament, I eat whatever one of the available options is the least unappetizing. But yeah, so I mostly eat. I don't really eat very much meat because I'm
good. Cookbooks, cookbook recommendations.
Good cookbooks. Anna Jones, 3 brilliant cookbooks, very easy to follow.
Please don't tell me you have that new one that's gone viral, which is called, and I can't believe I'm saying these words out loud, A Pinch of Nom.
Oh no.
No, that's awful.
I think hollybobs.
What I like about, there are many things I like about Anna Jones. Very good index, very lovely photos, very easy to follow the recipes. But also, they're just called things like a modern cook's year, a modern way to eat. There's none of this kind of like, you know, like...
drizzle, flash bang.
Yeah, the full bowl. Or, you know, it's just...
yeah.
Yeah. But no, they're really good, really easy to follow. And I think her best recipe is actually the beetroot bay bourguignon, which honestly, it's actually A, so much quicker than one with beef, and it's so good.
Beef bourguignon?
Yeah.
With beetroot?
Yeah, it's really, really good.
That sounds great.
Wow, that sounds healthy. I'm going to recommend two things. The first is Far Cry New Dawn, which is really cheeky, really, because Far Cry 5 happens in basically somewhere like Montana, which has been taken over by a kind of doomsday cult of Christian fundamentalists, and you have to slaughter them.
I thought Far Cry was about dinosaurs.
That's Far Cry Primal, which is the previous one, which takes place in prehistory, and you only get to use a bow and stuff like that, which is very fun, and I enjoyed that, and I killed many prehistoric creatures. But that's fine, there were loads of them. But then what they've done is, they've done it so that this is the same map, but like after an apocalypse. But I just find it very soothing. You can snipe people from a really long way away. And I of all the computer games that I played recently, the Far Cry series is just the most straightforward fun. Like, I love, you know, we have this conversation, I love The Witcher, I love story, but they don't really muck about with story. There's some cobblers taking place in the background, but really it's just about capturing the outposts. Everything lovely. And my other one is the TV series Patrick Melrose, which was on Sky. Available through Now TV as well. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch in an excellent performance from him based on the novels, the memoirs by Edward St. Albin, five of them. David Nichols, who wrote One Day and Us, did the adaptation. It is just such a beautiful TV adaptation. Like, everything is so lyrical and so low-key and shot so beautifully. It got great music in it as well. And great performance. Hugo Weaving as his dad is... I thought, if you thought Agent Smith was a bad man, then his dad is so much worse. And it's the first piece of TV for a while that I've just thought I could watch any amount of it. I'm really sad that it's over. I mean, there's only one episode left to go on Star Trek Discovery, the second series, and I'll be honest with you, I have absolutely no clue anymore what's going on, but I'm quite enjoying that too. Do you have any TV?
So I've been, for truly terrible TV, I've been really into this program that they play on Sunday night, you know, when you're in that zone on Sunday night where you're not having any thoughts, you're just like sitting there and you're empty.
Yeah,
it's called Escape to the Chateau.
And
it's
go
this,
on.
It's this couple who just, they bought this chateau for the price of a two-bedroom London flat in France, and they are doing it up, and every episode they're just doing something more hideous to the chateau, like decoupaging the walls and stuff.
Oh, I love that.
It's so good because they have such bad taste, and it's just, it is a joy to watch, like, people destroy a really beautiful chateau. And also, the funny thing is, it's really good Brexit TV because they hate the, like, French state and all of their red tape and the French builders who come and do stuff, and they actually they hire their mates from Britain to come and do the jobs on the chateau. It's great.
Wow.
I know I haven't really sold it, but I
no, you have really, no, you've really sold
very
it.
Funny.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not supposed to be funny; it's supposed to be aspirational, but
yeah,
you know.
You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Helen Lewis, and my co-host, Stephen Bush. We're recorded by India Bork, who is off. If you have tears, prepare to cry them now. She's going for a life of excitement in Hong Kong. So thank you hugely to India, who has been the silent presence behind many of our best and worst podcast moments. And we are produced by Nick Hilton, and our theme music is by the Underscore Orchestra, licensed under Creative Commons.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go Facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.